All right, ready to dive into a really interesting area of law. Today, we're looking at the per se rule in antitrust law.
Okay.
And we're going to focus on the case that really sort of put it on the map, United States versus Trenton Potteries Company back in 1927.
Yeah, Trenton Potteries, this case is, it's a really foundational case in antitrust law.
Totally.
I think it helps clarify a lot about how we think about price fixing.
Yeah, and you know what's so interesting about it?
Yeah.
Is that this all comes down to, of all things, bathroom fixtures.
Yeah.
Toilets and sinks.
Right. It's the roaring 20s. Uh-huh. You know, we've got the Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890. It's in place.
Okay.
And we've got Trenton Potteries along with 22 other companies. And they're basically controlling this market, the bathroom fixture market.
Wow.
I mean, they control 82% of the market.
That's incredible. So what was it that actually got them in trouble?
Well, they were hit with accusations of a couple of conspiracies.
Okay.
Kind of your classic price fixing. So they were all agreeing to charge the same price for these products, basically eliminating competition.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, they were also limiting who they were selling to.
Okay.
So they had this kind of exclusive group they were calling legitimate jobbers. And, you know, they would only sell to this group.
Interesting.
So that really, again, cut out a lot of competition, made it hard for smaller businesses, and, you know, I think really limited the choice that consumers had.
So did they try to defend their actions at all?
Yeah, well, their main argument was that the prices they were setting, they were claiming that they were reasonable.
Mm.
So, you know, they kind of tried to play this card that, oh, we're actually, you know, we're setting fair prices.
Interesting. Did that argument hold up in court?
Initially, they were found guilty in the district court.
Okay.
But then the Second Circuit Court of Appeals came in and they reversed the conviction.
Wow.
Because they felt that the trial court had made a mistake by not allowing the jury to decide if the prices were, in fact, reasonable or not.
Okay, so it goes up to the Supreme Court, obviously.
Uh-huh.
What was the real sort of crux of the case? What was the big question before the court?
I think the big question was, are fixed prices illegal under the Sherman Act, regardless of if they are reasonable or not?
Right, because if they were considered reasonable,
yeah,
then maybe it wouldn't be a problem. Right.
Right.
Okay. So what did the Supreme Court decide?
Well, this is where the per se rule really comes into play.
Okay.
They sided with that initial conviction and declared that any agreement to fix prices between competitors is automatically illegal.
Wow.
It doesn't matter if they're reasonable.
Okay.
So under the Sherman Act, it's just
automatically illegal. Okay. So why such a definitive ruling? Like, why did they feel so strongly about this?
Well, they recognize that even if prices seem fair in the moment, if companies are allowed to collude, then those prices can easily change. Justice Stone had this great line. He said, "The reasonable price fix today may, through economic and business changes, become the unreasonable price of tomorrow."
I see. So they're kind of looking ahead and saying, well, even if it seems okay now, this could really set a dangerous precedent.
Exactly.
Okay. So that's why Trenton Potteries is such a landmark case, right?
Right.
Because it set this really clear precedent that's made it much easier to actually go after price-fixing schemes.
Absolutely.
It also kind of made companies think twice about even trying to do it.
Yeah.
So it really reinforced the idea that competition is so important.
Right.
For a healthy market. But the legal journey didn't end there, did it?
No, not quite.
It already went from district court, Second Circuit,
right,
Supreme Court,
yep,
back down to the Second Circuit.
That's right.
What happened then?
So they had the Supreme Court's decision now. They had to take that into consideration.
Right. So that per se rule was now like the law of the land.
Exactly.
So did the companies, I mean, did they manage to get out of this price fixing scheme after all that?
No, not at all.
Really?
The Second Circuit upheld the original convictions.
Okay.
So the per se rule really solidified its place in antitrust law. It was a win for consumers.
Yeah.
And a signal to businesses that collusion was not going to be tolerated.
So, I mean, after the Supreme Court weighed in, it seems like it was pretty open and shut.
You would think.
Yeah.
But actually, there's still one more little surprise.
Oh, there is. What happened?
Yeah, one more legal hurdle to overcome.
All right, I'm intrigued. What happened next? Okay, so after the Supreme Court ruling, the Second Circuit upheld the convictions.
Right.
What more could there be to this story about toilets and bathroom fixtures? I mean, it seems pretty settled, right?
Well, you know those 23 companies involved?
Yeah.
They weren't quite ready to give up.
Okay.
They decided to kind of take their case to the court of public opinion.
Oh, really? So they lost in the legal arena, but they wanted to try and win over the public.
Exactly.
How did they try to do that?
Well, they launched this whole public relations campaign, arguing that the government was overreaching, you know, that they were interfering with their right to do business. Mm-hmm. They were claiming that they were actually being punished for trying to provide stable and reasonable prices.
Okay.
And they actually tried to argue that this was a benefit to consumers.
Wow. So they tried to spin price fixing, basically, as a good thing for consumers.
Yeah.
That's a bold strategy. Did it work?
Not really. I think the public was already kind of wary of big corporations having too much power,
yeah,
especially after the excesses of the Gilded Age.
Right.
And, you know, the government did a pretty effective job of framing the case as a victory for everyday people, protecting them from price gouging and unfair practices.
It sounds like a classic battle between, you know, corporate interests versus the public good.
Yeah, I think it really was. Mm. And this case really highlights the antitrust law. It's not just about legal principles.
Yeah.
It's also about public perception and, you know, political will.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, ultimately, antitrust law is really about shaping a fair marketplace.
Right.
That's competitive and protects consumers.
Right. And in this case, it showed that even though the courts have a really important role in interpreting and enforcing antitrust law, public opinion can also play a big role in how those laws are actually applied.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So even though they tried to sway public opinion, Trenton Potteries really helped solidify the per se rule against price fixing.
Yeah.
And it really was a warning to businesses about the consequences of, you know, colluding to stifle competition.
For sure. It became this landmark case, setting a precedent that we still see today. But it also raised this interesting question.
Okay.
Are there any situations where price fixing could actually be justified? Is the per se rule maybe too rigid?
Right. Because it makes sense in a case like Trenton Potteries, where it's very clear that they were colluding to fix prices. But what about more complex scenarios? Is there a need for a more nuanced approach sometimes?
Yeah, and this is where the rule of reason comes in.
Okay.
It recognizes that not all agreements between competitors are automatically bad.
Okay.
Sometimes collaboration can actually lead to benefits for consumers.
So how is the rule of reason different from that strict per se rule?
It's kind of a different way of analyzing these potentially anti-competitive practices. So with the per se rule, certain actions like price fixing are always illegal. It doesn't matter what the reason is.
Uh-huh.
But with the rule of reason, you have to look deeper into the facts of the case.
Okay, so it's not a black and white situation.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the rule of reason asks questions like, does the agreement actually harm competition? Does it hurt consumers?
Right.
Are there any potential benefits? It's about trying to find a balance.
So it's a more flexible approach.
Yeah, exactly. So the courts have to weigh those potential harms of an agreement against its benefits for competition and consumers.
I see.
They'll look at factors like how much power the companies have in the market, what the agreement actually says, and the overall impact it has on the market.
Is there like a real life example of how the rule of reason has been used?
Yeah, for sure. There's a case, Broadcast Music Incorporated versus CBS.
Okay.
It's also known as the BMI case. It went to Supreme Court in 1979.
Okay.
And it involved music licensing.
Music licensing?
Yeah.
How does that fit into antitrust law?
It's an interesting case because it deals with these things called blanket licenses. Mm-hmm. So BMI and SCAP, they offer these licenses to broadcasters.
Okay.
And it allows them to basically use any song in their catalog for a fixed fee.
Yeah.
But some broadcasters were arguing that this was basically just price fixing.
Okay.
Because it eliminates competition between the individual copyright holders.
So did the court see that as a per se violation?
No, actually they didn't. They used the rule of reason in this case. Okay. They recognized that this blanket licensing system, it had both pro-competitive and anti-competitive aspects.
Right. Because on the one hand, it looks like price fixing.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, there might be benefits to it.
Right.
So what did they decide?
Huh. Well, they found that even though it did resemble price fixing, it also had benefits. Like it made things more efficient, it was more convenient for broadcasters, and it guaranteed that copyright holders would get paid.
Okay, so it wasn't as straightforward as Trenton Potteries.
Exactly. The blanket licensing system, you know, it had elements that could be seen as restrictive.
Right.
But it also had these legitimate justifications. So
yeah.
The rule of reason allowed the court to really weigh all of those different factors.
Mm. That's a really good example of how Something that at first might seem like a clear antitrust violation might actually have some pro-competitive benefits.
Right. It depends on the situation. And that's what's interesting about the rule of reason. It acknowledges that the business world isn't always just black and white. And sometimes collaboration can be a good thing.
But wouldn't using the rule of reason just make things more complicated? I mean, the per se rule is so simple and straightforward.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does add complexity. It requires a much deeper analysis.
Okay.
You know, gathering evidence, expert testimony, economic modeling. You really have to understand the market dynamics and how an agreement will affect it.
Yeah.
But it also allows for a more accurate assessment, right? So you want to make sure that you're not punishing companies for collaborations that actually end up helping consumers.
So it's like a trade-off then.
Yeah.
Between simplicity and having a more nuanced understanding of the market.
Exactly. And that's a big challenge for antitrust law, I think, finding that right balance. You
right.
need clear rules, but you also need a flexible approach so you can keep up with the ever-changing business world.
And that tension between those two approaches, it seems especially relevant now with like the digital age and everything.
Absolutely.
I mean, we have these giant tech platforms, new ways of doing business, and things are changing so rapidly.
Yeah, the digital age is really putting antitrust law to the test.
So, I mean, how are the per se rule and rule of reason holding up in this new landscape?
That's a big question, yeah.
Are they still relevant?
A lot of people are debating that.
Are they still effective? I mean, the per se rule and the rule of reason?
Yeah, I mean, it's a question that's being debated everywhere, in courtrooms, in academia. You know, people are really trying to figure this out. And there are some people who think that the per se rule, you know, with its really clear prohibitions, it's actually more important now than ever, especially in these digital markets where things are moving so fast.
So the argument is that it kind of provides a bright line for companies.
Exactly. It's like, you know, this is the line. You cross it, you're in trouble. So it really discourages companies from even trying to engage in anti-competitive practices.
Right. It keeps them from even testing the waters.
Exactly. And that can be really important in digital markets because the impact of anti-competitive behavior can be really hard to undo. It can spread really quickly.
But then there's the argument that the per se rule is too rigid.
Right.
I mean, especially in a world where technology is constantly evolving.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the other side of the argument. People say that it can actually stifle innovation by preventing companies from collaborating. You know, maybe some of those collaborations could actually benefit consumers in the long run.
Right. So maybe there are some instances where collaboration would actually be a good thing.
Exactly. And so they argue that we need to rely more on the rule of reason in these digital markets, because it lets you take a more nuanced approach to these agreements that might have both good and bad aspects.
So again, it's like trying to find that balance.
Yeah, it's always about balance.
Between having these clear rules, but also being flexible enough to keep up with all the innovation.
Yeah, and one area where this is playing out that's really interesting is with vertical agreements.
Oh yeah, vertical agreements. What are those again? Just to remind me.
So those are agreements between companies that are at different levels of the supply chain. So like, you know, a manufacturer and a retailer.
Okay, right. So they're not competitors. They're different stages.
Exactly. And traditionally, certain types of vertical agreements were actually considered per se illegal.
Like what? What kind of agreement?
Well, like resale price maintenance, for example.
Resale price maintenance.
Yeah.
That sounds a little bit like price fixing.
It does, yeah. Basically, what happens is the manufacturer tells the retailer, you can't sell this product for less than this price.
Okay.
So the thinking was that it really limited competition at the retail level.
Because the retailers couldn't compete on price, right?
Exactly. But in 2007, the Supreme Court actually revisited this issue.
Okay.
It was the case of Legion Creative Leather Products versus PSKS.
Okay. And they decided to stick with the per se rule in that case.
No, actually, they overturned it.
Really?
Yeah. It was a 5-4 decision.
Okay, close.
Yeah. But they said that resale price maintenance, it should actually be analyzed under the rule of reason, not that strict per se rule.
So why the change?
Yeah.
What was their thinking there?
Well, I think they were starting to recognize that unlike horizontal agreements, you know, where you have competitors at the same level of the market, vertical agreements, they could actually have pro-competitive benefits sometimes.
Okay.
So, for example, with resale price maintenance, sometimes that can actually encourage retailers to invest more in services and promotion.
Yeah.
You know, things that make the product more valuable to consumers.
So instead of just looking at the impact on price competition, they're trying to look at the bigger picture. How it affects consumers overall.
Exactly. So they're acknowledging that these agreements, they're more complex than they might seem.
Yeah.
And you need a more nuanced analysis to really figure out what their impact on the market is going to be.
So that case, Legion, that really kind of opened the door to more challenges to the per se rule, especially in the digital economy, right?
Yeah, I think it did. And it's part of this bigger trend, you know, where we're seeing more reliance on the rule of reason overall in antitrust law, because the courts are really grappling with all these new complex business practices,
right?
Especially in digital markets.
Okay, so where does that leave us today? Is the per se rule still relevant? Or is it kind of on its way out?
Well, it's definitely still around. It's still important for certain core violations.
Right.
Like horizontal price fixing, for example, like we talked about with the Trenton Potteries case. But in other areas, especially in the digital world, its use is being debated. It's being refined.
So it's a bit of a moving target right now.
It is, yeah. And it's all about trying to make sure that antitrust law is doing what it's supposed to be doing. You know, promoting competition, protecting consumers, but also not getting in the way of innovation. And that's not always easy to do.
No, it sounds like a real challenge.
It is a challenge, yeah. It's a challenge that's going to keep lawyers and judges busy for a long time.
Well, it's been a really fascinating conversation today. I mean, we've covered so much, from bathroom fixtures to digital giants. Any final thoughts you want to leave our listeners with as they try to navigate this, you know, complex and ever-changing world of antitrust law?
Yeah, I mean, I think the main thing to remember is that whether we're talking about the per se rule or the rule of reason, antitrust law is really about making sure that we have a fair marketplace, one that's competitive, one that benefits everyone. And it's about protecting consumers from those anti-competitive practices that can hurt them while also allowing room for innovation for those market forces to work. And, you know, technology is going to keep changing. We're going to see these principles debated and refined. But I think the goal is always going to be the same, a healthy, competitive market that serves the public good.
Well said. It's been a great deep dive into antitrust law. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.